The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
The amount of people looking for Andy Moore around Positano, it was all the rage. They're asking him what he's got to do next. When's the next episode out? The Football Pod's gone international.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
All right, you're welcome back. It is Thursdays Off the Ball. Nathan with you until 10 o'clock tonight. We have the football show coming away from 9 o'clock. A feature interview with Jaap Stam, a key part of Manchester United's treble-winning side. And we're going to be reminiscing and doing a real deep dive into that treble-winning season. That coming away at 9 o'clock. But you all remember this, right?
We're looking for a sponsor for the first Jamaican bobsled team.
Their dream was to compete in the Olympics. But they chose a sport they knew nothing about.
Great. Very good.
In a climate they had never been.
Cold weather endurance is vital to building a successful sled team.
You have no business here, Jamaica.
People are always afraid of what's different.
How will I know if I'm enough?
When you cross that finish line.
Where did these guys come from?
Jamaica!
You'll know.
Cool Runnings.
I think we can all agree that Cool Runnings was one of the most iconic movies of the 90s. If you're too young to remember, well, it was the unlikely story of the Jamaican bobsleigh team that went to the Winter Olympics. And one of the inspirations for Cool Runnings was Dudley Stokes, who was a founding member of the real-life Jamaican bobsleigh team. And I'm delighted to say Dudley is with us now. Lovely to talk to you, Dudley.
Thank you. Thank
God,
you very much.
That is a smile that would light up a room.
Yeah, well, actually, this is genuine joy.
Genuine joy. I guess when people hear that you were the inspiration for a movie like Cool Runnings, they want to know which character was based on you. But from reading about the movie over the last few days, it's not totally true to life. Maybe best described as a fictional account of factual events.
Yeah, it was no documentary. But the character Leon played, the driver, was... based on me, took a lot from my life. He was married, which I was at the time and remain today. And it combined my life with that of my brothers, because my brother had just missed out on the 84 Olympics in the 100 meters in a photo finish, and he was deemed to be fifth in the race and so did not go.
Right.
So, there was some inspiration, and it did capture some things. But what's endured with that movie is the spirit of what we try to do. It and since I've watched it in later years with my own children and so on, I've really come to appreciate the movie for the spirit that it captures, the spirit of Jamaica, the spirit of what we're trying to do. But when it came out in 1993, I was not the biggest fan.
Why?
Because I thought it would be a documentary of my life, and it wasn't. As when I got my head around that, then, you know, I was able to appreciate it for what it was. A really good, funny, feel-good movie, which now has a cult following.
Yeah, it certainly does. Maybe even bigger than a cult following. And like, that feel-good side of it is something that you can be incredibly proud of, because it is that real family movie. If you know, you've kids of 8, 9, 10 who are starting to get into sitting down and watching a film with their parents, it's one you can sit down and they can really take something from it. Like, there's a lot of life lessons in that movie.
Yes, and this they managed to do that very well without burdening the script and still keep it funny and looking light. But, you know, a lot of that has to do with the reality of the story itself. The whole attempt was at once crazy, bold, and, you know, you can't invent like the crash at the end, which actually happened. So those things, they convey a lot of life lessons just through the story without trying to engineer anything into it. And, I agree with you. That has made it so enduring.
Before we get into the true story and your life and going to the Winter Olympics four times and being part of that Jamaican bobsleigh team, the movie and around that time, when initially maybe you're not bowled over by it, but the buzz around it and what it's done over the last say 25, 30 years and the effect it's had in your life. When you think back, were you a huge star in Jamaica when the movie came out? Is it something that, you know, people come up to you in the street now and still talk to you about?
Yes, is the short answer. But that movie was released in October 1993, I think, just ahead of the Olympic season in Lillehammer, which was February in 1994. And at that time, the bobsleigh program was really faltering. We had gone to two Olympics. We had a spectacular crash in Calgary. We didn't do much in Abbeville. And we'd fallen off the radar. Then that movie came out, and it really made the Jamaica bobsleigh program. We went to Lillehammer and finished 14th overall in the top seed, ahead of all American sleds, seventh nation, 10th on two of the four runs, in the top 10 fastest starters. And that would not have been possible if that movie hadn't come out at the point in time that it did. And it's really changed my life since then, to this day. Last year, I hosted a live stream on YouTube where people brought their own copy of Food Runnings and sort of started it on a countdown. And then I watched and commentated, gave them some of the real stuff that inspired some of the things in the movie. And a lot of the, I hope I gave them a lot of the background that wasn't in the movie. But, you know, we had about 250 people on board, not much promotion and so on, and have developed some really good relationships. But it's crazy how crazy people still go about that movie.
Let's get into some of that background then and the true story behind it. I presume you didn't grow up wanting to be an Olympic bobslayer.
Wasn't top of my ambitions. I was a keen footballer, but more desire than talent. And as always, very physical, very athletic. I was in the Jamaican Army. I trained at the Royal Military Academy, Sandhurst, in England. And while there on TV, I saw the sport of bobsleigh for like 20 seconds. And I remember concluding that those guys have got to be crazy. And fast forward now 5 years, and some Americans, George Fitch, William Maloney, who lived in Jamaica, had this idea, of course, in a bar one night, and having consumed a little alcohol, they then see the pushcart derby on the TV in the bar. And then they both start talking about, yes, it's bobsled thing. You know, we could do it here in Jamaica. And they started out, they got themselves accredited and got themselves into the Jamaica Olympic Association. And all they had to do was find athletes, and they couldn't find any. So they went to the Army and they asked Colonel Ken Barnes, who is the father of John Barnes, a Liverpool and England player. So Colonel Ken Barnes was in charge of sport in the Army. They asked him for some athletes. And then he said, yes, I have some people for you. And then they said, we need one with proven hand-eye coordination. And he said, yeah, I know the guy. And that's how I ended up. I was told to go. And you know, it hasn't worked out too badly.
Yeah. You mentioned John Barnes' father there. I'd imagine if you were a keen footballer, John Barnes was a real inspiration in those days.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I knew of Johnny when he was in Jamaica because he had an awesome reputation. But then he went to the United Kingdom with his father. His father was sent there as a defense attaché. And, you know the rest of the story.
It worked out.
But he was discovered and playing in the park and so on. But he was technically sort of one of the best players I've ever seen. And I had many a good moment watching him play.
So your approach then, do you remember that first conversation where somebody says, we're thinking about sending a team to the Winter Olympics, we'd like to qualify a Jamaican team in the bobsleigh and we'd like you to be a part of it? Is that how that conversation goes?
No, it was more like my command officer calling me in and said that Colonel Barnes was just on the phone and he told me that you need to go to the National Stadium on this day to try out for a team, a bobsled team. I have no idea what that is, but you need to find out before the tryout. So that was the conversation. So then, you know, this was pre-internet days. So it was looking in sports magazines and phone and friends and to find out what this bobsled thing is. And then one part of the movie that was actually factual is that we did go to the trials. There were a number of people there, including there were a number of servicemen, but there were some civilians who had responded to an ad that was put in the paper. And we did turn on the lights, run a clip of bobsled on the screen. And when we turned on the lights, only the soldiers were left. And that actually happened.
So you had no choice. You had to stay at that stage. Like, the obvious thing, and the movie's built around this, is that a bobsleigh team in Jamaica and the lack of ice, the lack of facilities to practice on. In reality, when the decision is made and you're part of this team, how big a disadvantage is not being able to get into a real bobsleigh on ice until the Winter Olympics? Or actually, can you do 90% of it anyways?
This is how it breaks down. So the bobsleigh, its complexity is comparable to a Formula One racing car, except that it doesn't have an engine. And it gets power from the speed and power of the athletes at the start, and after that from gravity. So it's a sport that really is all about the start. That's over 70% of the entire sport. And of course, we are the ideal place to find athletes and develop athletes to push the bobsleigh. So there we actually have an advantage. After the start, now you need equipment, similar to Formula One again. You need to have equipment that's at the top end, or you're going nowhere. And then you come to have to drive on the track. And that comes down to experience. You simply have to do that. And to do that, we have to travel to get ice time and learn the rudiments of the sport, which is very, very different from any other. Well, not different from other sliding sports, but it certainly is different from motor racing and motorbike racing and so on, in that the bobsleigh operates in almost four dimensions. So it's straight and level, and then it turns, and when it turns, there's tremendous G-force, it flexes. It's a very complex piece of equipment, and you have to really understand your angles, pressures, the shapes of corners and so on in order to be successful at the sport. And there's only one way to do that. You have to get out there, find the ice and go sliding.
And Dudley, when you're going through that initial process then, are you excited about the challenge and the opportunity that might come and all you get to learn and getting to go to a Winter Olympics potentially? Or are you doing this under duress where your general tells you you have to do it, and you're being put out front and center, and you're a high achiever, you've got a Sandhurst, you're entering the Jamaican Defence Air Force wing, you are a high achiever in life, and now you're being put into something that I guess nobody knows if it's going to work. It's two lads in a bar have conjured up this idea, and now you've got to make it a reality.
Yeah, and this is where we come to the two critical things that you need for success in whatever you're trying in life. You touched on the first one there, confidence. The second thing you need is ignorance. No, not ignorance of what you're trying to do, but you need to maintain a willful ignorance of all the things that can go wrong. You cannot have an undisciplined imagination. Of course, if I knew I would be crashing on the Chrysler at 78 miles an hour, I probably would not have gone to the Olympic Games. But I went there with the notion that something really painful could happen. I like to drive things, to manipulate things, to operate things, and being a pilot fed into that. And it fascinated me that the bobsleigh had to be driven, and it fascinated me to learn how it works and how corners work. And every track you go to, is different, to learn the different tracks and the quirks and so on. That was engrossing for me. And as you said, up to then I had been a high achiever. And we went to the Olympic Games on a really outrageous program. 5 months, we had 2 races. We weren't going to do the four-man. We decided 2 weeks before the games, and then I started practicing four-man, and then suddenly we're in the race. My brother was on the sled. It was his first time in a sled. He had come to the Olympics to watch. We had an athlete injured, and he was drafted in. And
this is your brother who the year before is trying to qualify for the Summer Olympics and doesn't make it basically on a photo finish. So he's gone to the Winter Olympics in Calgary to watch you. Somebody gets injured and he just hops in the bobsleigh.
Yeah. So that was quite an athletic performance. And by the end of the week, when we crashed, we had the 7th fastest start in the race. And that was going from a real comedic event on the first day. So there were a lot of high achievers, a lot of highly motivated people who were very ignorant of the consequences of what we were trying and confident that we were going to get through this somehow. And then we didn't. And that was a huge blow to me. It's the first really big failure of my life. I'd never had up to that point to deal with anything like that. And we had to get through it. And, you know, it started as we went over on the Chrysler. That crash lasted 28 seconds. And the first few seconds were, oh, no, not in the Olympics. Oh, there are 500 million people watching this. And then I realized, you know, I was stuck outside the sled because the load, the way we got in the sled and so on, it was complete confusion. And everybody was on top of everybody and all of them were on top of me. So I could not move. And I just had to sit there looking on the ice. And I started to work out that this was not the way to go. This is not how things are supposed to be done. And then I very quickly went through what we needed to do. We needed to raise the money, we needed to get our equipment, we needed to get a coach, we needed to get ice time, we needed to improve the athletic ability. I went through all of that, and at the end, when I was taken off the ambulance to be checked out, and I was sitting there with my brother, and I outlined that to him. And that's basically what we did for the next 10 years through to Nagano. So we raced after Calgary, Abbeville, then Lillehammer, and then Nagano. But really all on that plan, that 28 second plan.
So the crash obviously is the finale of the movie and ends up as this heroic moment of the 4 bobsleighers carrying the bobsleigh down, everybody roaring their approval and the real Olympic spirit of it. And actually the footage of the crash is sort of a mishmash of the theatrical side and also what really happened. So they do put in your crash as part of that. Can you describe what it's like those 28 seconds as you're going down? Are you fearing for your life? Have you been through this sort of crash before where you know how to brace yourself and protect yourself from serious injury? Are you thinking of the failure already then? Are you thinking of humiliation, of what people are going to say? Well, what's in your head in a moment like that?
Well, I tell you, that crash is in the movie with live footage because they couldn't convince any of the stunt drivers in Calgary to reproduce it. So, and some of those drivers were pretty good. But they weren't interested, so they used the actual footage. And I've crashed before, but this was by far the worst crash up to that point in my career. I hit my head on 7 separate occasions. Including very hard as we first went over. After I realized I wasn't going to be able to get under the cold, which is what a driver does in a crash and is usually fairly comfortable. And I just decided I had to relax and just go with this. There was no way to resist these forces. So as I was relaxed, I just became very calm and saw the folly of what we were doing and what needed to be done. And that literally is where my mind was for most of those 28 seconds.
And do you still look back over 30 years later as that Winter Olympics as a failure?
No, this is another thing. Things happen in life, but they generally tend to come neutral. In other words, they're not good or bad. And this is a gift that people have, because we have the space to, with our reaction, with a reaction that we choose, to change the meaning of an event. So the crash looked pretty bad. It was a disaster. Could have been killed, walked away. But then we kept going, and we built a team, and we went from being comedians to competitors. And so that is the real meaning of the crash. One, it really gave us a resolve, me in particular. And secondly, there wouldn't have been Cool Runnings without that crash.
Mm.
That crash made the movie certain. And the Olympics couldn't have been a failure, and the crash was not a disaster. That's how it looks looking back.
That's an interesting line from comedians to competitors. Like, when you think back, was it fun before you became competitors, when you started out, when you had those few months to try and somehow get this together? And there's a lot of pressure, I'm sure, but was it enjoyable? Like, are you looking around thinking, like, this is a bit mad, but we're going to do something a bit insane with the eyes of the world on us. Like, actually, we're going to enjoy this. We're going to have that real Jamaican spirit and enjoy this.
Yes, well, you're right. There's a lot of pressure, and there wasn't much fun for me, and not just in Calgary, for my entire Olympic career. Fun in enjoying the atmosphere and what's going around and the people and so on, which is something I sort of regret now, not making the maximum use of being in all those Olympic games and so on. But this is my character, my nature. I was 100% focused, zeroed in, and I was making sure that everybody had a miserable time, not just me, and that we were on everything all the time. You know, one of the things we realized early on is that we had to have a cultural change, if only for a few moments. And so we used to have a phrase, and I would say work time, what we would say. So anybody on the team could call out work time, but everybody would understand that we're switching now to a German or a Swiss mode, because you're kind of bobsled on the wrong culture. It's not an easygoing sport. It's not something that you show up with your track spikes and then you run for 10 seconds and you get a medal and you go home. Everything that an athlete does to prepare themselves, you have to do. Then you have to train to push the sled. And then you is the athletes that maintain the sled. Certainly in our case, we couldn't afford a sled mechanic. Certainly not on a full-time basis. But you also have to prepare the sled for racing, which includes preparing the runners. So, you know, for basically 60 seconds of going down the track, you're putting in 18 hours to get 60 seconds. And it's a brutal sport. So you have to come to it with a very tough mindset. You know, not to mention that is usually negative 10 to negative 20 outside and you're in tights. So it's not for the faint heart.
No. So you had two Winter Olympics, Calgary and Albertville, pre-Cool Runnings, and then you go to two more afterwards, Lillehammer and Nagano. What was the attitude of the other competitors after Cool Runnings? Because, like, there's, as you said, there's such a sense of fun in that movie, but by that stage, as you say, you want to be serious athletes. Were you fighting to be taken seriously right till the end, or actually even after you went to Calgary and people saw the crash, saw what you went through, saw how you bounced back, did other Winter Olympians, did other bobsleighers take you seriously?
Yeah, no, by the time we had come into into the Lillehammer season, the competitors around us knew that we were the real deal. We spent a lot of time in Austria. That was our home away from home. We trained with the Austrian team. We shared coaches with them. We traveled with them. And in Aberville in 92, they actually won through an athlete named Ingo Appel. They won the four-man. So the guys knew we were good. So the athletes weren't a problem. I tell you that I went to a premiere of cool runnings in Innsbruck in Austria. This is after seeing the grand premiere, which was in Kingston, Jamaica. I went to the one in Austria, which they had converted a big casino, a huge casino they had there. And they had a huge crowd and they showed this movie. German dubbed, of course. And the place went wild. And that is when I really started to think that there might be something to this movie, because this is a different culture. This is in a different language. It's dubbed and so on, and all these people have come out and they were in love. So that was an eye opener for me, on the road to my appreciation for cool runnings.
Mm. Where are the Winter Olympics in Jamaica now then? Has there been a legacy to what you and your fellow bobslayers did over the space of four Winter Olympics?
Yes, we have a legacy. We are in a rebuilding phase now. My brother is in charge there. But I work quite closely with the men's team and the driver, Shanwayne Stevens, who is actually... in the UK. He was born in Jamaica, moved to the UK at an early age. And but he's based there. And he's also a member of the RAF, but he's been given elite athlete status because he actually is that good. And, so we're trying to make sure that he has the best preparation given the realities of life now. That he has the best preparation for going into Beijing. Clearly the last couple of seasons have been upside down, but I think he'll be all right. We have two female teams that will be competing on the female side, and very good athletes. It depends on how well we can get the backup systems together and the equipment we can get them in. We could have a surprise on the women's side.
Right. And in terms of getting funding, I presume in Jamaica, the Summer Olympics are the focus of attention by and large, and probably the focus of investment as well. And we've seen the incredible success that the sprinters have had in recent years. Is it something that gets investment, that people look at the Winter Olympics, look at the bobsleigh team, look at the Winter Olympians and think this is what we want to get behind?
Very difficult. Very difficult. The fit and the exposure has always been hard to explain to folk. We've had success in the past with some local hotel groups, but the appetite for that right now is well down because of the hit that they have taken to their earnings. The big large corporations tend to want to hedge the bets, and instead of backing a team or an athlete, they go behind, a country, if it's sort of Jamaica, going to the summer games where you have 100 athletes, whatever, or they go to the event itself and they somehow get associated with the event where they reduce the risk of, some doping scandal coming up or some athlete running off and disappearing after they put their cash in. So we have to fight all those things. We have to look at ways to generate our own revenue streams from sales of various things and so on. We have non-fungible tokens now that are out. So it's always been an uphill battle.
Yeah. It's always been a fight.
It always will be. Yeah, it always will be.
Yeah. Dudley, it's been a real privilege to talk to you. I've always loved the movie, and I would recommend anyone who hasn't seen it and you want to sit down at the weekend with the kids, you might see a little bit of Dudley right at the very end. It's probably not the way you wanted to be in the movie, just that sort of upside down going downhill, but you were the inspiration for the whole thing, I guess, so that's the main thing.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. I enjoyed the chat, and I appreciate you having me on and speaking to the people of Ireland, where I am descended from on my mother's side.
Oh, yeah?
She's an O'Malley. Yes, she claims to be a direct descendant of Granny O'Malley.
Wow.
I tend to believe her, even though I don't have the concrete proof, but she is the spirited side that would allow us to go bobsled, and I definitely come from her, and she continues, even in her 80s now. Is quite a hard person to keep up with.
Oh, really? Oh, really? You never heard what part of Ireland?
It's on the coast, Atlantic coast. I couldn't give you the village. I don't remember it. I do know of it. I have seen it. It's been pointed out to me on a map. But I don't recall it.
Well, O'Malley is a good Mayo name, so you never know. There could be a good connection there. And you're probably right. It's probably where that streak of madness comes from.
Yeah. I think so.
Dudley, great stuff. Thanks for joining us, and best of luck over the coming years as well with the Jamaican Winter Olympic team. We'll be keeping a close eye on it.
Thank you very much.
All right, quick break. Football show, don't forget, coming up 9 o'clock. Yap Stam will be with us.